Well, that was super duper, folks. We made record time. And now I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Michaeline. Please come on down. You bet.
She did it. My name's Michaeline, grateful alcoholic. I want to thank Tom for asking me to come up or down or wherever I am. And welcome to the newcomers and happy, happy birthday to everybody. That's amazing. If you're new, I came here when I was new and got to raise my hand for 30 days. And do you remember Mark, got his one-year cake. And I thought, a whole year with nothing? Not possible, right? And I just celebrated 37 years. So a year's possible, right? I want to thank my friends that came to support me. I don't care how old you get. Maybe you need more support when you get older. But these people saw me ride a bicycle and sell plasma and live in a camping trailer in somebody's front yard. And I didn't live in North County. I wasn't back in healthcare yet. I was making sandwiches at a deli was my first job. Jack Ladd got it for me. He banged on my trailer door and said, "You got a bicycle, I got you a job, you start tomorrow." I didn't really want to work, I just wanted to be in AA. I mean, it's kind of hard to stay sober all day, overnight, all weekend, and be in AA and work. I was just like, whoa, over my head. So it's true. I mean, now things are funny that weren't. I wasn't laughing about it, right? I got so emotional when I first got here. Steve Knight was one of my old-timers. And he's got, 57, 58 years of sobriety now. And so he was really old when I got here. I mean, Jesus. Old. And Norman and Alpine Lil and all these people. And Nathan and I were young. We were young and perky, I might add. And we got sober together, and we just used to look at all the old people and just go, oh, my God, they're so old. How embarrassing. And now we still hang out, and then we go, oh, my God, look how old she looks. Like, we don't, right? I mean, it's just so funny because we're pathetic. I mean, it's just, I don't get it. So I don't believe my own press. I almost drank at 6.5 years sober, so I really related to you when you shared that. I was going to drink rather than look bad in AA. I hope you never go through what I went through. But I was going through a rough spot, and I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't want my sponsor to think she sucked, you know. I didn't want her to know. I mean, I'm like, all of a sudden, it was just like I was kind of like going like this, and then I was like this. And I thought, and so I started sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I wished I was like. Then I was sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I thought I should be like. Then I was sharing what I thought I wanted you to think I was like. And what happened was I came about an inch away from a drink. And in retrospect, I saw that I thought, like, that won't look bad, right? But being real here would look bad. And I looked bad at different times here. I looked amazing at other times. I'm either practicing my defects and all my affairs, or I'm walking hand in hand with the master. Just depends on the day. And none of this was planned. A lot of you know my story. I grew up in Phoenix, going to be a nun, ended up as a go-go dancer. Hi, Joni. And all by the time before I turned 15, I mean, I was going to nun school and ended up at the pirate's den. I mean, how pathetic. But this is how old I am. Minimum wage then was 65 cents an hour. I know, and I'm still up, upright. Wow. And I'm not cut out for any of that. I'm not cut out for anything but being an AA, trust me. But I decided I'd be like Donna Reed. And there are people here that know who she is. I've been to other groups where they think, is she from? I think Google her if you don't know. But she's like the epitome. You know, she wore pearls. I still wear pearls. I mean, it's like I loved her. And I just decided to take off at 15 and come to California and marry a sailor and have a baby and get a puppy. And I mean, I make a meatloaf. And that's really what I was like. I was just kind of like, you know, if you've got a spiritual hole and you don't know it, you will try to find a plug early on. Something's going to make you feel better. And it's going to fill it up. And if you don't know you have alcoholism, you don't know you're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-seeking, and self-delusion. I never knew any of that till I got here. But that is what was wrong with me forever. It's always been what was wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me till I got here. But so you proceed as if you're a normal person. And I don't know if you've ever tried to act when you're like you're a legitimate person when you're not one, but it's stressful. It's like holding in your stomach, you know? It's like, it's so hard. I don't do that anymore, but I'm just saying it's hard just to pretend to act like you're a normal person. And if you do normal things and live in a normal house and get a normal job and drive a normal car, you can trick yourself into believing that you're like a normal person. It's so exhausting. It really wore me out. And I kept having kids, and I worked in an emergency room. I had Girl Scouts, Little League, soccer, you name it. I mean, I was doing every legitimate thing a good, legitimate person would do. And I wasn't drinking. I was a martyred Al-Anon, not to offend the martyrs in the room, but my thing is, I like it if you're the bad one, and then I'm the good one, and then you say you're sorry, and then I forgive you, and then you buy me a couch. Basically, that's how I liked living. I would have never become an alcoholic on purpose. Trust me. I would never have done this. But I do have the disease of alcoholism. I am powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over it. That means it's going to turn out different than it started off. I would never do the things that I did to the people that I love had I had power over alcohol. I would have been home when I said I'd be home. I would have stopped drinking when I said I'd stop drinking. I wouldn't have missed that Little League game no matter what, ever. But something about me and alcohol got along kind of well. I don't know if you've ever been drunk, but it's relaxing, you know? And if you've been tense your whole life and then you get drunk and then you're relaxed, it's like it's not rocket science. Do that again, because why be stressed ever again? I love this stuff. I thought this is a good thing. I'm not going to go turn into a big bad person. I'm a Girl Scout leader, for Christ's sake, you know. But it just did it. It just did it. And when I decided I wasn't going to do that, I was doing it more. And then I was doing it earlier. And the kids are going, and I divorced him because of his problem. He's wrecking my happily ever after family. And alcoholics do that. Just for spite, I wouldn't have become an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Just to make my point. Until I became one, I thought, Jesus, no wonder people drink. I'm so much more relaxed. And if you can keep drinking, then you'll just say, screw it. Go with it. Just go for it. I mean, the kids are annoying anyway, really. They get on my nerves. They're too needy. And I think they have issues because of their dad, basically. I mean, that's all I could come up with is, because I don't know why they're being so weird, but I'm stressed and I'm trying to relax. That's it. And that's kind of how my drinking went. It was a mess. And I didn't know about bottoms, or I may have had a higher one, you know, just, but I didn't. So June 29th is my regular birthday. And We also did not just the Donna Reed Show, but the Waltons. And so if it was on TV and it was a happily ever after show, we tried to do it at my house. And so it was the Walton's birthday. Is you have no chores on Walton's Mountain on Walton's birthday, right? I mean, it was like a great show, and I thought, what a great tradition. Let's do that at our house. And that was when I was poly happy, you know. But if you have acute alcohol poisoning, you're going to throw up the breakfast and wreck it for the kids. So, sorry, it's over. And I told him I was sorry, but I'd write a check or something and take them someplace later in the day. Just give me a minute. I don't know what's the matter, but I was sure it was his fault. He hadn't been there in 3 years, but I was still like post-traumatic stress or something. I don't know what I thought, but I could not believe that I was wrecking everything. I couldn't. And I was. And I didn't know how to answer it. If somebody said, what's wrong with you? I don't know. And so, of course, I can't go 2 hours without a drink anymore. So, of course, I'm not going to make it all day. And, of course, I don't know that I'm not going to make it all day. And they believe I might, and I don't. And it's bad. And I came out of a blackout, and I didn't know where I was. I didn't know where they were. That had never happened. That's the truth. That had never happened. That's just one more thing, the bad things that happen. And God feels sorry for us sometimes. And that's what I think, because he has always done for me what I can't do for myself. He's never done for me what I could. Not once. Ever. I've tried to trick him. Don't think I can do this. Oh, yeah, you can. Do it. Oh. But I just said, I don't know if you're there. I hope you'll help me, because I did not know to come here. And June 30th, 1982... 24 hours later, I'm in AA, and I have 11 hours, and my first meeting was Thursday night, Channel Road, Lakeside, and God, I had 11 hours without a drink, and they went nuts. I mean, it's like a golf score, you know, it was like, that's really low. I got a bigger round of applause than the guy with 30 days. I thought, they're totally into this, you know, it's like, wow. Who else is clapping for you if you have 11 hours without a drink except here? Because nobody else is proud of us out there, just so you know. I mean, you know, here it's like, yeah, you know, I'm off parole. All right, you know. I got a driver's license at 53. How old was homeboy? My friend, he's a former gang person, and he came out of prison. I think he was 53 before he got his first driver's license. I mean, we had a party. It's just like, they don't do that out there for normal people. They would question that, you know. And that's really what I was like. I was just a freak, trying not to be. And I did not explain it to anybody, and I got here. And within, I remember saying to my sponsor, you know, and she says, you know, some are sicker than others. And I went, I know. Look at them. I mean, I was so sad. They're easy to pick out. It's not that. And she goes, I mean you. And I was like, really? Me? Why? You know? And if you didn't think you were sick, you were the ones that they'd pick as sick. It was just crazy. So other thing I didn't like to do was open mail. I'm still not a big fan, but, you know, if you're not going to pay it, it's a tip. Don't open it. Why bum yourself out? That's my motto, you know. I would rather, Nathan, you say it all the time, ignorance is bliss. I said, yes. I had no debt when I got sober because I had no mail. And oh, you're going to have some financial. No, I don't know anything, you know. I mean, we didn't have a mailbox at the trailer in Pat Webster's front yard, you know. It was just no mail. That is freedom. It wasn't. That was good. But the kids did go to live at their dad's for a year. Only a year he's been sober. That year, they went to Coronado because they said, something's wrong with you since you joined AA. And I said, I agree. I don't know what it is. I said, but It shouldn't take that long. They only have 12 things they want you to do. And it's not like they have, it's not like Esther or something where they have a whole series of books or Course of Miracles, you know. It's like they got a couple books, 12 things, knock it out, you know. And I'm smart, so I thought, I don't know, knock this out quickly. And took longer than the 12 weeks I anticipated. But it was funny. I mean, we had so much fun. We were young, and we'd go to AA dances and try to get laid. Is this being taped? No? Okay. But basically, we were kind of going for it, and we wanted to be loving to God and newcomers, too. But basically, it was bologna sandwiches and go to the dance and get laid. I mean, we were just... You didn't? Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe it was just me. Sorry. It could have been another friend I had. Liar. Oh, God. So, if you can't get a boyfriend and you live in a camping trailer in somebody's front yard and your sponsor has no sympathy for your lot in AA, you will get close to God or you'll blow your brains out. I mean, seriously, I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a TV or a radio or any transportation except a bicycle. And I did think I'd lose my ever-loving mind. And I would ride my bicycle to the payphone to call my sponsor to try to sound like I wasn't in self-pity when I was, you know, because she didn't like have patience with that. So I'd try to work her. But nothing. I got nothing. No sympathy. They didn't care about your inner child where we got sober. They wanted you to find the missing adult. And I was like, oh, got it. Okay. That's the one that's missing. Look for that one, you know. It was like, okay, got it. But that's really true, right? So I just got, I asked God to hold me every night because I couldn't get a date. I think sometimes that's true. And all of a sudden, I felt something. I couldn't tell you what it was, but I knew it really did happen to me. And it happened around September 7th, 1982, because it was not long right after my third step prayer. I felt it. I knew something. I knew that I knew. I couldn't explain what I knew, but anybody that had done the steps knew what I knew. And I didn't have to have words for it, but I just knew. I knew not to leave. I knew to stay in the middle. I knew to pray to stay in the middle. I still have the same service commitment 37 years later. I'm a secretary and a bathroom cleaner and a literature person, and that's what I do. I'm not doing anything different. I still have H&I panels. You know, I do stuff here. I don't think I already did my time because I want to have some more time. And so, you know, that's what I did. I started taking the steps. I had mean sponsorship where they helped you with your four step. They didn't wait till God's time. They were mean, really. Joyce was mean. There, a lot of them were very mean to me. None of them in this room. Steve was nice, but Steve's nice, you know. But they weren't. The women were mean. And they'd roll their eyes. That's not spiritual. You know, I mean, I even know that. And, but they're trying to make a point, like, I'm an idiot. I'm a toe stepper. I step on people's toes. They retaliate seemingly without provocation. Driven by fear, 100 forms of that. Plus, I had so many things that I didn't know about myself. I didn't know anything about me. I knew about you. I was wrong, even what I knew about you, but at least I was astute and focused, but not on me. I had no idea. This is elementary psychology 101 that changes a life in the course of a miracle. That's what happened. They started working. The kids came home. I remember the one-bedroom furnished apartment behind Bob's Big Boy, and we're all packed in there, you know? Crappy couch I was sleeping on with just boards. I was so grateful for it. So grateful. Carl brings me a car, free car, Remember Carl from the club? Oh, Jesus. So he comes, and I've been sober over a year, and he goes, I brought you something. You've done good, honey. Those kids are home and can't very well ride that bicycle to get them to school. And he says, I brought you something. Come on outside. He brought me a car, a free car, with good tires on it and gas in it. And I looked at it, and I was like, no thanks. It was a red Pinto. My God, I don't think so. I mean, I will sell plasma, do all kinds of other things, and live in a camping trailer in somebody's front yard, but I'm not driving a Pinto. I mean, I have my standards. But I didn't want to hurt his feelings, so I said, I can't. It's just not right. And he thought I was just being humble or something. I don't know what he thought, but he left, drove it back to the club. And then I called my sponsor. I said, you're not going to believe this. Carl brought me a car. And she goes, oh, my God, God's gifts keep coming to you. And I said, God's gifts suck, and they're in ugly wrapping paper. And I said, no, I'm not driving a Pinto. And where I got sober, some people brag about their sponsors want them to tell people who their sponsor is, you know. Mine was, say you have one, don't tell them it's me, you know, right? I was like, oh, my God, I was just such an embarrassment. But I thought she wanted me to be honest, and she didn't. She wanted me to be grateful. Not really there at that time. So she made me call him and get the car. She made me. And 3 days later, I'm giving a newcomer a ride, and I'm dropping the kids off, and I'm getting out of the deli at the liquor store, and I got a job back in healthcare. I mean, it's like, I love my car. I love Carl. I can't even believe somebody would give me a car. You know, 6 months later, she goes, you know, how much is the insurance running here? I went, I mean, I got a free car. I'm not going to pay insurance, you know. And I need cash. I need money. I don't need to put out more, you know. And she made me the same day get insurance. It was insane how they were. So I like to warn new people. If your sponsor asks you how you're doing, say good. No, I mean, really, how are you doing? Grateful? Woo. Did I ever make a gratitude list today? Just say that stuff, because if you don't, you'll be on 50 H&I panels and have service commitments at 20 meetings. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like what they put you through. So don't tell them. Tell another newcomer. You guys can commiserate, but never tell your sponsor you're sad, you know. These are the steps we took. I mean, that fourth and fifth step, it was just amazing. She didn't want me to wait. She said, I'm telling you this, Mikey, because your life's at stake. We're not playing around here. You're going to die of alcoholism. I'm a hope to die drunk. I don't drink too much wine with the Chardonnay. I'm a beer chugging, box of wine drinking. Get as drunk as you possibly can, and I'm okay with that. And so she was honest with me, and I just was like, holy crap, I have issues. I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked. I wasn't mildly surprised. I was like, are you kidding? I don't want to know more things that are wrong with me. I thought I had a drinking problem. It was embarrassing to be this screwed up. And they said, there's good news. There's 6 and 7. Remember Betsy? Yeah. She used to say, honey, there's more steps. Don't worry. Because I'd stress out. I'd just stress. And then you've taken 6 and 7 and keep working on those. Because I thought if I worked really hard and have a million service commitments and stayed with H&I and said my prayers and read my stuff and did all my steps, that I'd arrive someplace. And I did. I'm so incredibly human, it's annoying. I should have turned out like saint-like with all the time I put in here. I've seen people that don't do the same stuff I do that are better. I mean, I don't get it. But I'm one of those. Thank God. Because if I would have turned out as good as I asked God to make me in 6 and 7, I wouldn't need him and I wouldn't need you. I would not be here tonight. I'd be better than you, really. I'd be so much better. Level playing field this way, you turn out human. I did those amends. I made better financial amends when I made less money. Interesting. There's an energy that happens through those steps that make you want to do it all. I wanted to clean it up. I didn't know how sometimes, and I didn't know it'd take 10 years in one case, but I knew I had to do it. The only person that was left on my amends list was my dad. My mom had died when I was young, and I kept doing inventories on him. I couldn't get that one right. The rest I got. But she kind of let me evolve with that inventory. I kept doing it, and finally I went, I got it. I'd wanted him to be an incredible dad. I had not been an incredible daughter. I wanted him to accept me for who I was. I had not accepted him for who he was. I wanted him to just remember my birthday, for God's sakes. I knew his was sometime in October. So me. When you're the center of the universe, it's very important people remember your stuff. You have no idea that they were even born, you know? I just was like, oh my God, got it. So I called my dad, he was outside of Houston, and I said, I'd like to come over and have some coffee with you. He goes, all right. I said, I think I'll come over and fly over next week. He goes, well, I can't pick you up at the airport. And I said, well, I don't need you to. I got a ride already. And I'm going to stay at so-and-so's house. I got it covered. I just want to have coffee with you. And that, I didn't think much about it. I was just glad he said okay. And what I would have done before I'd done the inventory and the steps worked inside of me, I would have thought he meant, I don't like you. I won't drive across town to pick you up. And what I did was I got to listen longer. And listen spiritually, which what he was saying was he was getting older and he doesn't like to drive that far. Doesn't see as well. That's what he was saying. I always stopped him. I always assumed, I interpreted as if I speak Portuguese, right? So I'm going, everything's cool, and my aunt, my dead mom's sister, whoop, tells me, she goes, that's not even your real dad. Exactly. Traumatic. I said, what? I'm not German? I mean, freaked out because I thought I was German. Draheim is my last main name, right? She goes, it was a Greek or a Jew. It's a restaurant owner where your mom was a waitress. I never can remember. So she never told you that, huh? No, she never mentioned that. And she goes, well, that's probably why you two had that thing, you know, and I was like, I'm like a freak show like Kramer, and I go racing into the Legacy Club outside of Houston, and I'm telling an old-timer named Lois, who got sober the year I was born, this, I'm not German, the dad, a flight, I'm in, you know, not my, and she just looked at me like I was on drugs or something, and she said, you know, daddy's a daddy. He came here to clean it up, clean it up. Does it make any difference? Let's just have a meeting on acceptance. In California, you go on Oprah with this story. You know, in Texas, you have a meeting on acceptance. Okay. And 1 hour and one old timer and one topic, and I was good. Went and saw my dad, went, cleaned it up, got close to him. Never told him I found out. For what? So I just got to be an incredible daughter. He was a fascinating person. I missed out just because of the way I'm wired. I just missed out. I didn't miss out on everything, though. I met the right guy. He died unexpectedly without my permission, I might add. And but I got to have it. I had to know what it was like. I had to have that experience. I got to raise those four kids. I got to have 9 grandkids that have never seen grandma drink. My oldest grandson's 35 years old. Maybe 30. He'll be 36. Jesus, I'm old. I am lucky to be upright. He'll be 36 in October. He's the oldest. The youngest is 5. My son and his wife are in recovery, them and my grandson, who's 15, and his best friend are arriving tomorrow night from Arkansas. They're on the road, and they're both active in recovery. And I did all that because you guys taught me to do that. I had a credit rating that wasn't in a single-digit category. It was like crazy. I thought, this is good, you know? I got 9 great-grandkids. I spent 46 years in health care and finally retired and began a 2-year state grant for the state of California, part of a federal grant. I'm working on that for the next 2 years. And then if I'm not dead, I may consider retirement, but I might not. I don't know I'm as old as I am. The steps have changed me. The traditions have made me grow up. Well, we do a tradition study at my house, and we do skits, and we do 12 weeks. We had Bill Wilson was our guest leader. And if you've never watched Bill Wilson do the traditions, what we do is we pull him up on YouTube, Bill Wilson, Tradition 1, and he talked for a few minutes on Tradition 1. We go, thank you, Bill, when he was done. And then we talk about Tradition 1. We have to do things to fall in love with AA all over again. I do. You might not need what I need, but I need to be passionate and excited about the things I do. I don't want to just take up a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe everything here. I owe everything. I don't owe a little bit. I owe everything here. My family, my oldest daughter, who's also in recovery, she wrote in like a travel 12 and 12 and big book thing. And she wrote, thank you for leading the way. You're such a great example. That is not what she said to me 37 years ago. When Flo came to pick me up to take me to my first meeting, I'm trying to act like I'm a good mom when I'm not a good mom anymore. And she said, you know, when will we be home? And I asked Flo, when will I be home? And she says, probably about 10. I said, we'll be home about 10. I'll be back about 10. And they went 10 in the morning. I was so embarrassed. But Flo just smiled and she nodded and she told him, you know, your mom will be home. And that's, isn't it cool that, I mean, they know where I am tonight and they're all over the place. They're all grown up. Grandkids know. My son knows that he probably won't be until later in the day, and he knows my home group's on Sunday morning. My home group's been on Sunday morning for 35 years. That's where I am on Sunday morning. It's nice to be dependable. It's nice to be active. If you need to pitch in a little bit more, pitch in a little bit more so you can stay. Thanks. Done.
Thank you, Michaeline. That was incredible. And we do record it. And they're going to sell like hotcakes. I would like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for an incredible dinner. And now we will close in the usual manner with the Lord's Prayer.